It is with very, very heavy heart that Robbie and I are here to report that our Admiral level Patreon patron, John Espinosa, has passed away on Thursday, April the 13th in the morning after a very, very long bout with cancer.
We got to know them over the Admiral Zooms.
And we would like to dedicate this episode to John Espinosa.
Our hearts go out to John's family, and we're thinking of you. Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry. As we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager, your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Voyager actor, Garrett Wong, who in 2002 played Paul in the film Survival Island, and myself, your favorite helmsman, Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Robbie D. Remember, you can get the full version of this podcast and lots of bonus material by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/thedeltaflyers.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Garrett, Survival Island.
Oh my gosh. You bring up something that is just the
I don't know what to say. I tried to find a trailer. I didn't try that hard, I'll be honest.
Well, I think it has multiple names. So
wasn't it called Pinata or something?
Pinata was one. Survival Island is another. Demon Island is another. So it has multiple names. I don't know. Yeah. But it's available on, you know, DVD and some. And usually I would get texts at 2 or 3 in the morning from people going, dude, you're on Showtime right now. I'm like, oh okay.
That's funny.
Yeah, it'd be on late night cable. They would show this.
Oh, yeah. I've done some of those.
Yeah, this is basically a pinata and not the colorful kind at kids' parties. This is a traditional Mexican clay pinata. So made of clay, and it comes to life. It's inhabited by some evil spirit, and it starts wreaking havoc on these campers. And I'm sort of like a camp counselor, like I'm older, you know. So it was this group of people, which included Xander from Buffy, Nicholas Brendan. He was
Nicky
in it.
Nicky Brendan,
series regular from Sabrina the Teenage Witch, the boyfriend of Sabrina, who played Sabrina. I'm blanking on his name right now. So he was in there. Jamie Presley was also in it. It was kind of like a who's who of younger Hollywood. And I was a bit older than them. So I was playing the camp counselor, basically.
Right.
And fun experience shooting, but it was the reason why I missed out on Cameron Crowe's Almost Famous. That role of playing his boss, of who hired him for Rolling Stone, was my role. It was my role. Oh, and it was like, wow. I went in to read for that. And the casting director was like, hey, you know what? Forget about, I'm not going to record you anymore. I'm just going to have you meet with Cameron. The minute he meets you and just has lunch with you and talks with you, he's going to hire you. I know he will. And I was like, okay. I said, well, where is he? He's location scouting in San Diego for the next week and a half. I said, fine. I offered to fly myself and the casting director on my own dime, both of us. I said, I'll book our tickets now. We'll go meet him. She goes, oh, no, you don't have to do that. We'll figure it out. We'll have him come up to the casting office. And I said, well, come up from where he lives in Orange County. I said, well, no. Let's just say right now that I'm filming this project, Demon Island, and it's just taking a long time. I'm afraid to schedule anything on the days that I'm filming. So can we avoid that? So we had one scheduled time, which then Cameron canceled, so that we rescheduled a second time, which then got canceled again or something. And so the third reschedule was on the day that we were filming. I was first seen up first scene of the day. Call time was 6 a.m. So I made my, I said, what's the latest we can make this meeting with Cameron? And she said, 4 p.m. is the latest. I go, fine, let's do 4 p.m. because that'll give me a nice cushion sure. to film out in the middle of nowhere and drive to Santa Monica and right. be there by 4 p.m. Because if I'm the first scene of the day or 6 a.m. call time, oh, I should be done by noon 9 or noon at the latest, right? But first yeah. scene, if we hit it really quickly, I could be done quickly. Well, guess what? No, it's now 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. We haven't shot anything. Oh, it's 10 o'clock. It's 11 noon. We haven't shot a thing.
What?
And yet nothing. Nothing. Everything was going wrong. The actors were acting up. Things were happening that just they didn't expect would happen. Just all these crazy hurdles came up. And I kept telling production, I said, I have to get out of here. The latest is 3 p.m. It's going to take me an hour to get to Santa Monica. So it's the latest. And at 2:45 or 2:50, they were like, dude, we can't. We're not going to get to you until another 2 or 3 hours. I was like, what are you talking about? I said, fine. So I called the casting director and I said, listen, I'm so sorry. It's now 3 o'clock. This is the latest that I can leave and still get there on time. I said, it's not going to happen. And she goes, what? I said, I'm sorry. I told you I'm filming and this, you know, crazy stuff is going to happen. I know it was first up, but they are so behind right now. And she goes, do you know Cameron left his house in Orange County just to meet you?
Oh,
and now
no.
he's already driven up. He's driving or he's driven up. He's waiting. And now you're going to say you're going to cancel. And I was like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. She goes, OK, well, we'll call you. Don't worry about calling us. Never heard back from him.
Oh, no.
And that was it. And I was so bummed out. Oh, God, it brings up so many crazy memories.
Demon Island. Demon Island.
That was. Yeah. And that was also the production I was on where I had met. I was flying on Southwest and I had met this flight attendant that I had gotten along with very well. And I was like, here's my number. Just call me next time you're in LA and I'll show you around. She called while I was working on Demon Island. And it was one of these calls. Hey, it's Angelina. And so my number is like that.
Oh no.
And it was because I didn't answer because I was in the
Demon
midst of
Demon Island.
Ruined my chances.
Ruined
with
everything.
With Angelina Seifert, and it ruined my chances with Almost Famous, being on Almost Famous. And it's like, it's so crazy because for years after that, I couldn't get that out of my head that I had lost Almost Famous. And I for years after, I kept checking Facebook for Angelina Seifert and could never find her again, ever. So that vanished just like the job.
Yeah,
so.
You should have known when you knew this movie was called Demon Island.
Demon Island, yeah.
It was haunted.
Yeah. I'm wondering what would have happened if I just said, like, you know, guys, I was first up. I have a meeting with Cameron Crowe. I'm leaving. And if I just left.
Yeah.
Because I felt like I could have left Robbie, gotten to Santa Monica, and come back.
Oh, easy.
And still been able
probably.
To film. Yeah.
Probably.
So, yeah. It brings up some sad memories, unfortunately.
Oh,
so,
I'm sorry
yeah.
that I brought that up.
That's okay, buddy.
So deeply.
That's okay. I got really passionate. You didn't expect me to go that far.
No. I just said you played Paul and
yeah, and then all this
Survival Island or whatever it's called.
And it came out. My God.
Okay.
All right. So this week's episode, are you ready to watch this?
I am ready. Yes.
Nightingale, the episode. And Robbie and I are going to watch this and come right back with our recap and discussion of Nightingale. We'll be right back.
Yes. For all our Patreon members, stick around for your bonus material.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, everyone, we're back from watching Nightingale.
Wow, Captain
Look at that. Harry Kim's big episode, season 7, huh? What'd you think?
I did not remember this.
At all?
At all. Not at all.
Well, you know, you also appear at 19 minutes and 37 seconds.
I have a couple of hallway scenes, and I sit on the bridge once or twice. Like, I don't do that much. But honestly, no. I don't remember even ones that I had a lot to do sometimes. So it's not because I had a lot or a little.
Okay. All right.
It's just I don't remember.
We were wrong on director entirely. That was
totally
LeVar.
Wrong.
We were wrong on writer as well. Story by Robert Letterman and Dave Long. I think maybe this is an outside pitch or something like
no,
that.
Well,
let me
tell you what this is. When I saw that, Bob Letterman was an editor on our show.
Oh, Yes, Bob, that's right. Okay, and, so and not, Bob he doesn't directed, go by Robert. He goes by Bob Letterman.
He goes by yes. Bob Letterman.
That's right. Okay.
He was an editor. He edited at least one of the episodes I directed. I know that Bob directed on Next Gen. I think he sold a couple of story ideas. I don't think he ever wrote the script.
Yeah.
But he may have sold like a Next Gen story, a couple of DS9 stories. Like he sold some stories. And his partner, Dave Long, when I didn't know who that was, when I looked it up, there is no other credit other than Star Trek. He must have been a friend of Bob Letterman's. Yeah. And they came up with ideas and pitched them to Rick Berman or whoever and sold
a few. I love that. Yeah. So teleplays by our friend Andre Bormanis.
Yes.
So I'm very excited to see his name on this episode.
Yes.
And
for those of you that are Patreon supporters, you have probably heard his interview. We recently interviewed Andre, and he talked about so many things behind the scenes about how he got connected to Star Trek, his ambitions to be a writer, not just a science consultant. And
it was a really good interview
with
Mr. Bormanis. And, and for those of you out there, if you haven't had the chance to be a Patreon supporter, this is your chance. And you get all of these interviews from the commander level up. So these are all the perks that you get, these extra interviews.
It was fascinating.
It was really, really fascinating. Yeah.
It was really.
And it's typically, you know, we've been around on this planet long enough that we've heard pretty much everything. So when we hear new stuff that we don't
brand
know
new
about,
stories
we get excited.
It was great. I was glad to see his name on a script. Agreed. So close to when we interviewed him.
Yes
it was like putting all those pieces together. And
it all makes sense at that point. It's like a little validation.
And LeVar came back and directed. He hadn't directed in a couple of years with us.
That's right. The last time that he directed, I think, was the 100th episode, season 5, Timeless, when he directed me in that big one. So I think that was the last time he was here. So
let's do our poetry synopsis.
Okay, this is my haiku for Nightingale. The Kralor need help. Harry asked to be captain. The crew mutinies. Okay.
Nice. All right. We covered a lot.
Yeah. Give me that. Give me that limerick.
Okay.
Fire it at me.
Here we go. The limerick poetry synopsis for Nightingale.
Yeah.
There once was an acting captain named Harry, who probably should have been a little more wary. Icheb feels the love tickles from B'Elanna's mixed signals. To the Kralor, Captain Kim is legendary.
Okay. Yours ends on a better note than mine.
Yeah, you're a legend. You ultimately
I do help those guys out.
Help them survive. Yeah. You even help out the military involvement that we're not supposed to do.
To help out with.
But you do. You do all the things.
I did.
Huge episode for Harry Kim.
Oh my God. Do you see how many lines I had in this one? Holy moly.
A lot of words.
Yeah, a lot of words. Well, and
you want to talk about the guest stars?
Yeah, let's talk about the guest stars. Okay. Let's start with Ron Glass, who played Loken. Now, in the beginning, I was so confused with you, and I'm sure it's been edited so that it doesn't look like I'm confused in the intro, but I kept thinking Ron Glass was from WKRP in Cincinnati, and that's incorrect. The classic, iconic sitcom Barney Miller is what Ron was on. And I know that, but you know, my brain was just fried, I guess, when I was thinking about that. But Ron did 164 episodes of Barney Miller. Okay.
Wow.
So yeah. So that's where he, you know, that was his claim to fame. That was his, entree into a series regular. And so he did that. And that was a huge show. I remember watching that as a kid, too.
Oh, yeah.
You did, too. Yeah. Ron's very first credit was a 1973 episode of All in the Family, which, again, I watched that as a kid, too.
What?
Huge show. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Super, super, super cool credits.
Yeah, that was a huge massive credit for him to be on such a big hit at that point.
I mean, that's his first role to be on a massive hit like that. That's a coup for him.
Yeah.
And if you look at his resume, it's just one after another. It's a very long list of credits. It's similar to like Bob Picardo or Ethan Phillips' resume. Just
a lot of comedies, I think, you know, a lot of a lot of half hour comedies, which is interesting because we didn't get a lot of comedic actors on Voyager. You know, they were usually like theater trained,
very serious. Yeah.
But I love when we got, you know, these actors that were used to doing comedy. It brought a different, just a different vibe.
Yeah. And, you know, it was great to work with on set. And I remember being in awe of the actor from Barney Miller, you know, and also Firefly and the feature film Serenity, the feature film for Firefly, another sci-fi franchise there. But unfortunately, he passed away November 25th, 2016. Yes. So he's been gone for about 7 years now. Gosh, it's so crazy to say 2016 was 7 years ago. All right. Next up, we have Manu Intiraimi. We've already talked about Manu before. Yes. And we have Beverly Leach, who played Dayla. Her very first credit is a 1986 episode of Facts of Life. You remember that show?
Another half hour. Look at this.
Yeah, look at this. And she's born in Paris, Texas. So there you go. Tom Paris, Paris, Texas, where she's from.
Nice.
Yes. Next is Paul F. O'Brien. So Paul O'Brien's very first credit is a 1985 episode of Spencer for Hire.
Oh my God.
Avery Brooks was the lead.
Wow. My goodness.
Yeah. We also have Scott Miles, and he played Tarek, the crew member, the Kralor crew member that I was sort of, you know, bossing around.
Mentoring.
Mentoring, yes. 1998 feature film, A Soldier's Daughter Never Cries.
Oh.
Yes. And so that was his first
credit.
Was
that a TV movie or something?
I don't even know. Like. Yeah, it sounds a little TV
movie. Or a Lifetime movie or something like
or
that.
Or straight to video or something like
that. Yes, maybe.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe. Alan Brooks, who played the Inari Commander. 1979 feature film called Going in Style. Going in Style was Alan's first credit. Okay. We also have Bob Rudd, who played Brell, and his first credit was a 1994 film, Married People, Single Sex. And interestingly enough, 1994 was his first credit, but Voyager, this episode of Voyager, was his final credit as an actor. I don't know what he went on to do. Yeah, and I couldn't find any obituary or any type of information on whether or not he's passed or not. But it seems, Bob Rudd just said, hey, I'm doing something else, you know. Yeah. All right, and so that's it. That's a roundup.
All right, well, let's talk about this episode, the story here. So,
Okay.
So we start with a cool ship shot. It's on, Voyager is on a planet. Mm-hmm. It's touchdown on this kind of deserty, uninhabited planet.
Yeah.
We hear the captain's log saying that we've touched down on this uninhabited planet. We're doing maintenance and maintenance overhaul on the ship that's long overdue.
Yeah.
There's shuttles off looking for supplies. And I noticed this was a digital ship. This was not our model. This was definitely a digital ship, and it was really well done.
Yeah.
And this was around the time that we were sort of transitioning from the model work, that those large scale models that they had filmed into mostly digital stuff.
Digital
and this
effects,
was great. Yeah. Yeah. You had people walking on the deck of the ship, on the outside of the ship. Great interaction with shuttles lifting off and things. It was just cool.
Well, did you notice the shuttles were used to lift
the equipment.
It looked like they were pulling out structure, but the actual structural part of the nacelles was being lifted by the shuttle. And I thought, wow, that's interesting. We're not even using a crane. We're using a shuttle as a construction device. But, you know, if you're not in a shipyard and you're in the Delta Quadrant, you need to become a MacGyver, basically. Yeah. You need to MacGyver everything. So that was pretty
cool. Very cool.
It was very cool. Oh, and one thing you left out is that it was Torres. It was your honey that convinced Captain Janeway to do this major maintenance overhaul. Yeah.
Yes. Lieutenant Torres was bugging her for months. We have to take care of this stuff. So then when we go into engineering, there's B'Elanna, you know, on a mission. And the thing I laughed about was like, Janeway is chasing B'Elanna around engineering. I've never seen Janeway chase anybody. Janeway's like, you know, I don't know the dialogue, but she was like, you know, how's this going? How's that going? And B'Elanna is just like tossing over her shoulder. Yeah. You know, I don't have time for you, Captain. Like things are fine, but I got a lot to do. It was really funny. And this is a scene where there's like some kind of blackout or something happens.
Yeah, everything and fritzes out. Yeah.
Suddenly the lights come back on unexpectedly for B'Elanna. Yeah. And she's like, yeah. What happened? And Icheb's back there and he says, oh, I just fixed a charge imbalance or something in the matrix. And Janeway and B'Elanna are both impressed. But I immediately went, wait a minute, B'Elanna's being super friendly.
Oh, okay.
Like, what is going on? And then Janeway assigns Icheb to engineering. Like, he's done that, fixed that, you know, charge imbalance so quickly. You need to help us with these maintenance and repairs because you're so smart. But I just immediately thought, this is out of character for B'Elanna. She's never this friendly to anybody. Yeah. Why is she being so sort of coy? And which we'll see later in the episode,
right,
that it's to, you know, amplify Icheb's feelings about B'Elanna being flirty or having a crush on him. But it just seemed like, I don't know, I would have had her be much more normal and have him just pick up on the littler things rather than.
Yeah.
I mean, B'Elanna's not even that nice to me, to Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And she wasn't, you know, why?
Yeah, why is
suddenly
so nice
is Icheb like?
Is it because bizarre. He's the boy genius? Is that why she's so nice to him?
I don't know.
But frankly, until when he popped up, I'm like, oh man, I had completely forgotten about that character, as if like it just wasn't even in my mind. Mm-hmm. And now, because it's been a while since we've seen Icheb, right? So he pops in and has this scene. And you're right, very uncharacteristic of her to be so nice, because she's usually not that way with
anybody.
Not
that warm and
including
friendly.
You, right? So why would she be nicer to him than she would be to her love? So, bizarre.
It's weird. It was a little weird. We go inside the Delta Flyer. There's Neelix, Harry, Seven is there. The first thing we see is this flyby, and then we see this foot shot. Was it like Neelix's feet? And then we hear he's sleeping, that's right, and the camera sees his feet and then suddenly
I play that weird alarm right there, and I kept thinking, god, they had so many options, and I feel like Paris would have programmed that Delta Flyer to have a funnier sounding, like a funny alarm or
that
know,
would have been funny,
you know what I'm saying, like the, like if it was the horn from the Waltons' car, gaga, gaga, something like that, you know, just, you know, from the something from the 20th century that would have been
cool.
Yes, that Tom Paris would have been into a sound that we're familiar with. So,
but Harry is driving. He's driving again. By the way, Harry has been driving the Delta Flyer a couple times in a row.
Yeah.
We find out they're scouting for dilithium in some nearby nebula, and they have scanned and come up with nothing. They've scanned like four times at this point. Nothing. And then suddenly there's some small weapons fire around them, and there's a vessel approaching. There's another vessel becomes visible, decloaks basically.
Right. Yeah.
And we realize there's a bit of a battle going on, and the one that decloaks asks for help, and Neelix wants to help. And Harry's like, no, we can't get involved in a fight, you know, prime directive and all. But Neelix kind of begs, like, you know, we have to help these people. They need our help. I think they say that it's like a hospital ship or something, right? A medical ship.
Yeah. Well, they say we're on a humanitarian mission.
Humanitarian.
We're
exactly.
delivering medical supplies. So.
Medical supply. Yeah. They're playing the feelings card, the sympathy card really hard here. Neelix, they've hooked Neelix. He wants to help. And Harry
because Kim is already like, no, forget it. We're not even going to get, we're not going to get involved. We're backing up, reverse course. And Neelix is the one that convinces Harry. Yeah. We should help these people.
Yeah. So Harry comes up with a way to disable the attacking ship's weapons. We cut onto the Kralor bridge next.
Yeah.
And Harry and Neelix beam over to this medical humanitarian ship, supposedly. Lots of wounded there. We realize that the captain and all the officers are dead except for one. This is Tarek, who has no experience on the bridge.
I mean, in that one attack, which didn't look that
bad.
It didn't look that bad, but
they've killed half the people on the ship.
56 crew members, there's only 27 left. So after a few hits, which clearly didn't do that much damage, there's all these dead people. Yeah. So they're very, very fragile aliens.
They seem very sympathetic still. Yeah. And they say there's only passengers left alive, and this one guy on the bridge who doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah. Do you remember the name of this race?
They are the Kralor.
They're the Kraylor, but then the people that are firing at them are the
Inari, or
and Inari. Do you know what Inari is in Japanese food? It's a little, it's like a soy based pocket with rice inside there.
Oh, so yeah, it's like
Inari. So every time they were talking about the Inari, I kept thinking about
sushi.
Yeah. So whoever's editing this, maybe they can flash up an image of Inari pocket things just to show.
Okay. Inari, you're making me hungry.
I know.
Harry does decide to help them, and he kind of does some stuff and brings the warp back online.
Yeah.
And Harry goes even deeper and says, we're going to have to go deck by deck to restore these systems. And they basically say, well, we want to fix our cloaking device first. Mm-hmm. Seems very important to them.
Right.
And then we go into one of their hallways, I think, next, right?
Yeah, we're kind of like, it looks like it's their engineering area, maybe something, but we're kind of Harry's working on fixing all the damage. And Tarek's with him, and Tarek's amazed. Tarek's like, wow, how did you disable the Inari so quickly? And then, Harry starts talking about, well, it's all part of my training. It's my Starfleet training. And Tarek asks about that. And the best question is when Tarek goes, oh, so how long have you been captain? Harry's like, no, I'm just an ensign. He doesn't even know what ensign is, like most people in the world right now. Ensign is such a, I think a very small percentage of people even know that ranking, because it's just a naval ranking only in the U.S. military, right? You don't have ensigns in the Army, Air Force, or any other branch of the military. So, so he explains ensign is the most junior officer. And we find out that Tarek is on his first deep space assignment. So Tarek is really Harry Kim season one right now.
Yeah.
And, Kim and Tarek have a bonding moment, basically. I feel like this is a time where Kim has become, in a way, a mentor, or, someone to guide Tarek. Mm-hmm.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So then we jump out of this scene, and now we're in Cargo Bay 2.
We're in Cargo Bay 2, and there's this crane shot coming down. It was a nice shot. Yeah. By the way, I thought LeVar did a really nice job directing this episode.
Okay, so you did like his direction.
Yeah, I thought that was nice.
I did too. Yeah, I was hoping
nice camera movement, and it just, it was very elegant and very, very smooth, everything about
it. Yeah, nothing seemed out of place. It moved well.
Mm-hmm. But there's this crane shot. B'Elanna's coming in to check on Icheb. And I noticed he's got a snack in there.
Okay.
It looked like nachos.
That's what I said.
Didn't it?
Yes.
He's eating nachos.
She goes, what's that? He says, oh, the diagnostic of the antimatter injectors. He goes, no. The stuff you're eating. And he goes, nutritional supplements replicated to meet my metabolic requirements. My requirements are nachos. So, and he didn't say that, but I
didn't
I
say that, but it that looked plate. Like nachos.
It was nachos. Yeah. My goodness. So funny.
And he's like, and he's eating while he's working. So she's basically like, hey, you don't have to work all the time.
Yeah.
You need to relax sometime. Have fun. Again, I'm like, who is this B'Elanna?
Yeah. Why are you saying this?
Why? I mean, here's the trick, right?
Yeah.
Just to step back for a second. You're telling a story where someone we know, B'Elanna, we know her very well, is seen by another character in a way that's not quite right.
Yeah.
And the way they achieved that in this episode was to have the actress playing B'Elanna do things that weren't normal help that story. And I'm like, I would have been much more cautious about playing her, and maybe they meant to be more cautious, but they weren't, because she was very different than we normally see her. And it was only to help sell this story of Icheb seeing her like intentions and thinking that she's romantically interested. But I think it would have worked better if she had been more normal and he had been reading into things that were normal, it seemed strange to me.
It is strange, but you know, the way I validated the whole thing was I felt that she looked at him as he's a kid, you know, and usually when people are sort of short and curt and, you know, fiery, like B'Elanna's character is, when they're dealing with kids, they get a little bit more like, oh, so, you know,
soften up a little bit.
Fun? Yes.
I know. I thought of that too.
Yeah.
But it still felt like we were intentionally playing her in a very different way than we ever see her.
Okay.
So that the story would work. And I feel like it actually could have worked better if she had been normal.
Yeah.
And the kid without the experience was misinterpreting normal things
as
romantic interest.
Romantic interest. Yeah.
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 It's just like when Paris came in and said, you know, oh, you should try drag racing. I mean, I'm jumping ahead, but and he's like, oh, are you challenging me?
Right.
I was like, yeah, let's go do it. Let's have fun.
Yeah.
I feel like that worked because I wasn't being any different to him.
Than you normally would be, yes.
Like the story, the way he interprets it is, oh, that was a Klingon challenge for a mate.
Right.
But I wasn't playing it like it was, let's race. You know, if I had suddenly become Klingon-like and aggressive and made it would have... I see why he would have thought that was a Klingon challenge for sure, but it wouldn't have been Tom Paris. Like it would anyway. You get
what
I'm saying.
I do get what you're saying, but if Roxanne was to play it where she was her normal self as B'Elanna, would that have been enough for this B storyline to even work at that point?
I think so.
Okay,
I think it would have worked better.
Better. Honestly. Okay,
because you know when you saw B'Elanna running around engineering and Janeway chasing her.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't think, oh, well, now B'Elanna doesn't think Janeway's captain because she's not respecting her.
Right.
I just thought, oh, she's doing her job.
She's
like
busy.
That's how B'Elanna is.
Yeah.
That looks like how B'Elanna's obsessive, intense nature.
Mm-hmm.
If she's got to do repairs, she would, you know, walk away from the captain because she's got a million things to do and force the captain to chase her. I bought that.
Yeah.
But I didn't buy when she was like stopping everything to go, hey. How's it going? You should come rock climbing with me. It was just like, what? I love you. Anyway.
Okay, let's move on.
Moving on.
Yeah.
Where are we?
I think we're in the Kralor ship.
Kralor ship, yes. It's a very clean bridge. How they went from this
complete destruction.
Disaster that unbelievable to like a beautiful bridge. I don't understand, but anyway, Harry's done it all by himself. I wrote down Harry has repaired and done a full detail cleaning. It's like you took it to the detail shop and polished and shine and armor all the everything.
That's Harry's hidden talent. He's a good starship detailer.
He details.
He cleans the starship well.
They've repaired the vessel and Logan, who's the head of, he says he's the head of this research team, basically
he says he's a doctor is what he says, right?
Yeah. Yes. He says Harry should be captain and bring them back because no one
else can fly the ship.
Take them back.
Yeah.
And Tarek says he's only trained, you know, with shuttles. And,
right.
You know, Harry's worried about the Prime Directive again. Logan says they've got this vaccine to help all of these people that are dying on their homeworld, and they've got to get this vaccine back. And even Neelix again gets involved. Neelix very sympathetic. And Neelix says, you know, the planet that they need to get to is on the way back to where Voyager is. So Harry's like, okay, all right. Seven is not happy.
No.
She's like, does not think this is a good idea. But Harry agrees. And we go out to space and we see them cloak. We see this cloaking technology.
Right.
For the first time. And they cloak up and head off towards with Harry as the captain. Temporary captain, and then we're back on the bridge, I think, right?
Yeah. Well, it's a bit of a time jump, and before the bridge, that we do have a part where we we're heading back to the planet where we're supposed to deliver these vaccines, but as we approach the planet, we realize that or Seven detects there's three alien vessels.
Three Inari ship are orbiting around the planet.
Right.
And Harry's like, Voyager's in danger. Like, these are the guys that are attacking these super nice Prelors. These Inari are bad guys, hairy things. Mm-hmm. And
that's when we jump to the bridge of Voyager.
Gotta warn Voyager. Yeah.
Yep. You're thinking, oh my goodness, our main heroes are about to be in danger. But then now we flash to the Voyager bridge, and Janeway is kind of in the midst of, it almost looks like she's giving a tour to Geralt. Yeah. Or Geralt, I don't know how you pronounce that name, but, and she's just talking about possibly getting a trade done because we need certain resources and they have certain resources.
Yeah, she's giving him a tour. And by the way, I love the blocking and the shot that LeVar did here, because they come in on the bridge off the turbo lift. They walk on the upper level towards Harry's station. Then they go down to the next station.
Yeah.
And then they sort of fall into some coverage there. And it was just, again, elegantly done.
A great flow to the scene.
Yeah, very great flow. Mm-hmm. The camera was moving. LeVar did a really good job. And we realized Voyager needs some deuterium injectors. And we offer some, what do we offer? Zeolitic ore. Zeolitic ore. There you go. And that's when Harry Kim contacts him and asks, hey, Captain, is everything okay?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, what?
Why wouldn't it be?
Everything's fine.
And Harry talks about the several alien ships orbiting the planet. And Janeway's like, you know what? It's cool. I mean, everything's fine. We've made some new friends. That's all. When you coming back? And Kim's like, you know, there's a bit of a delay. Nothing bad. You know,
so didn't find any dilithium. Yeah, still looking for dilithium, Captain, which is not true.
Right.
But he acts a little, you know.
Yeah.
Super friendly. And
and
even Geralt says,
dilithium.
We can get you dilithium too. So he does seem very friendly. He does seem very friendly.
And that's the key word there for Janeway. She's like, ha ha ha, dilithium. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. We do see that Loken on the Kralor Bridge says that looks like Janeway and the Inari, they formed some kind of alliance.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem really nice, but you know, they gain your trust and then they make you subjects of the Inari. And so So Kim is, you know, still suspicious and thinks that these this humanitarian ship are the good guys.
Yeah, I'm assuming Kim probably did a scan to detect when the Inari depart from Voyager, because that's when you are back. We're back on the Voyager bridge and you hear Kim hailing Voyager, and Janeway's like, oh, we didn't expect you so soon. And Harry's like, well, actually, I'm closer than I let on. I also have some friends of my own. Which then leads us to the next scene in the briefing room, where Loken is explaining his need for help, for assistance to get back to their homeworld and with these valuable vaccines that they have. And of course, we know later that it's not the truth. But Janeway's like, you know, okay.
I'll think about it, basically. I'll
think about this,
And then he leaves, and Janeway and Harry continue to talk. I have to say, in this scene in the briefing room.
Yeah.
We had, you know, normally we're in space, so the lighting in there is always kind of that general space lighting.
Generic space lighting, but this was golden hour lighting.
We were on the planet surface, so outside the briefing room is the planet surface. So we had this really strong sunlight, this golden sunlight coming in.
It looked like it was either, it was sunset time, right? I mean, it was
beautiful.
It was gorgeous, yeah.
It was really nice to see that room sort of on a planet.
Yeah.
Just a different look. I thought it was really cool.
And I think up until this point, I've seen that. I mean, we've only really seen that type of light maybe once or twice, I think. We've seen it a couple times before, but not the golden hour, though. It's been like regular daylight, but not this beautiful golden light that we got on this one.
Yeah, it was pretty. Mm-hmm. It was very pretty. But basically, Janeway says to Harry in the briefing room, like, you've put me in a tough position and, you know, we could use the help of the Inari. They're offering to give us supplies that we need. And Harry basically pleads for a chance to help.
Yeah, Janeway says, I guess I could spare Chakotay or Tuvok to do the job. And Harry's like, no. The Kralor, they're already familiar with me. So, you know, why don't I just take care of this?
And his first real command, he says, he's been dying for he even says, like, if we were back home, I would be, you know, a lieutenant or, you know, far beyond this. I would have been promoted a couple of times, but being out here is kind of why I haven't had the opportunity to, you know, go up through the ranks. And
right.
So she allows him to go back, but she sends Seven with him.
And since Seven doesn't have a rank, I do outrank her.
Yes.
That's what
yes.
happens at the end. Yeah. I like that.
We go to the doctor's office. Ijeb comes in, and he comes in for some, he says, for a hollow emitter. But it's clear pretty quickly that he's not really there for anything serious. He wants to know, how do you tell if someone has romantic feelings for you? And the doctor says, well, you know, compliments or invitations for social activities, finding excuses to be in close proximity. And he just says, well, could that happen in a normal relationship that's not romantic?
Yeah.
And the doctor's like, yeah, sure, it could. But, you know, he kind of gives him some advice, basically. And yeah. Ijeb, once he's got some advice and feedback from the doctor, he literally leaves without getting the hollow emitter or anything. So clearly he wanted this feedback. Yeah,
he did. But before he leaves, the most important part of that scene is Ichib says, is there any way to be absolutely sure about this? And the doctor says, well, other than an open declaration of affection, there are some fairly reliable physiological responses, elevated blood pressure, increased beta endorphin production. And that's when he bolts out, because now he's got his information. He knows he can scan
scientific
Bellana.
We go to the corridor and there's Tom and Harry. Tom wants to come along.
Yeah. And this is the first time we see you, though, Tommy. It's so 19 minutes in. Yep. And 37 seconds. We see Tom Paris.
Yeah. Tom wants to join Harry on this, you know, escorting them back. But Harry
he's stir crazy.
You're a married man now. And you need to stay here. And it's interesting because Harry, in the end, he's like, he says, basically, Tom, it's always been like Captain Proton, and I'm always Buster Kincaid.
Right.
And now it's my turn to be
Captain Proton.
Captain Proton.
So. But you do bring up, it's about a girl, isn't it? There's a girl on that ship, which is funny because, typically it is about a girl, but not in this case.
Not in this case. True. Mm-mm. We go to the mess hall. There's Neelix asks Harry, you know, what he wants for dinner, offers a couple choices.
He calls me Captain too, which is kind of cool. So
But Harry's like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, you know, whatever.
And Neelix is like, wrong answer. You've got to be decisive.
Oh yeah, that's an important line. I mean, he says, if you're going to be a captain, you have to act like a captain. Never admit you're uncertain about anything. You can't be indecisive in front of your crew. And now I just want to throw in here, this is the reason why I wasn't a huge fan of Enterprise early seasons, because I love Scott Bakula. I absolutely adore Scott Bakula. And in interviews, he talks about his choices of how he played Archer in the beginning.
Yeah.
And he said, because he's such an early Starfleet captain, he wanted to play it with indecision, where he wasn't sure if he was doing the right thing, if he wasn't. And to me, it seemed like he wasn't a captain, exactly what this speech talks about with Neelix. It just seems like Archer comes off as a first officer. So that was my issue with Enterprise.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. It's very well said by Neelix here about being decisive and what it takes to be a leader. And at the end, I think Harry goes, Neelix, what does he say about what he wants
pull
to
me,
eat?
Yeah, pull me soup. Make sure it's hot. Something like that.
Make sure it's hot.
Yeah.
Yeah. You went from like, oh, whatever, doesn't matter, to like mad about it.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. Yeah.
I'm going to say this entire episode is just pretty much Neelix is the reason why I save these people. He's the reason why I become a little tough and hardcore, because, you know, he's kind of pushing me in that direction in a way.
Yeah.
So,
We go back to the Kralor Bridge. There's Harry. Seven enters.
Harry and Seven both enter. Yep.
Yeah. Tarek says, Captain on the bridge, when Harry walks in.
Mm-hmm.
And Harry's like, how do you know about that?
Yeah.
And Tarek says, well, I've been studying Starfleet. And
he studied the manual that I loaned him.
And then he asks the ship name. And what is it named? It's like
Medical Transport 136. So and Kim's like, I can go ahead and name it something else better than that. Nightingale, named after a famous individual, Florence Nightingale, who treated wounded soldiers on the battlefield. And Loken likes it. He's like, it's perfect. And by the way, the name Loken, all I could think of was Kristanna Loken, who guest starred on Voyager. Her last name is basically the name of our alien. And Harry basically hails Voyager, telling Janeway that we're about to head off. Janeway says, good luck. And Kim says, see you in a few days. Kim, yep. Yep. We have a Kim, we have a acting captain's personal log from Harry, which is the first time you ever hear that. That was nice. Yeah. And then
we see him rearranging his desk and he's got like, I don't know, paper weights and he walks around. There's a saxophone on a stand.
And I remember this. I actually remember this scene. And I remember LeVar was like, at the beginning of the scene, Garrett, I just need you to just straighten things out, make it your own, you know? And I'm like, okay, all right. I'll just kind of move things around. And I guess I'll make it. Because there wasn't a lot of stuff there. There's a few
No, there items. Wasn't much.
So it was a little bit of a you know, I felt like, oh, I don't know if this is going to play, but it looked okay. It was a horrible scene. Yeah.
Well, it was weird to see the saxophone and all that stuff to me over the captain's log. But then when Seven comes in, it's like, why are you decorating? We're only going to be here a couple of days. At least they owned it. Like
they did own it. Yeah.
They put it in the dialogue. Because if you had done that and no one had commented on it, I'd be like,
right.
It's weird. He's only there for a couple of days, moving in, decorating the place. But Harry does say, yeah, I'm decorating because, you know, captains need to have a personal relationship with their vessel. That's very important.
Kim asks if there's anything else. And Seven basically says, well, I asked Tarek to make a course correction. And then Kim immediately is like, what? He's never done that before. Oh, I better check. And Seven's like, look, I think he can do this himself. And Kim doesn't even listen to that.
No.
He burst onto the bridge. He's like, status? Tarek's like, would you write?
I wrote down micromanage much.
Yeah. That was exactly it.
Micromanaging Tarek, but so we go to the bridge and Harry's checking Tarek's work and he literally pushes him out of the seat and says, you know, let me show you how it's done.
Oh God. And so difficult for me to film this scene because I hate being micromanaged and I had to play the micromanager on this one.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, I don't want to do this, but I did it.
You did it. You pushed him out of the seat. We cut to Seven at the end of the scene and she's like, sighs and it was funny.
The entire time Seven can see everything so clearly, right? So I felt like she should have come up earlier to have a conversation
and just said,
but
dude,
let me shake you out of this like fog that you're in. Like, come on, man, just let him do his job. That's it. So now we're in the Jeffries tube with your lovely, lovely lady.
Oh my God. Icheb. Again, I wrote down too flirty. What is going on? She's never this friendly to anybody.
But then when he grabs that thing from her, he grabs her hand first. Yes. I'm like, what are you guys doing? Stop it. I don't want to see this.
Yeah, if that had happened and she didn't have any romantic intention, she would have been like, Icheb,
what are you doing? Yeah.
Like,
totally.
Let go of my hand. Stop being a creeper. You're just a creeper.
But
I felt like she was being a creeper. Like, again, this is not Robbie's jealousy of a relationship on the show with Tom and B'Elanna.
Right.
This is just, as a viewer, I don't buy it.
Okay.
Like, I really didn't buy it. I buy Harry feeling like he's got a micromanage. I buy all that. I buy Harry taking himself a little too seriously or... you know, whatever. I buy all that. I don't buy Janeway chasing B'Elanna around the thing.
Yeah.
I would have felt like Janeway would have stood her ground and just let B'Elanna run around.
Yeah.
And are you done yet? You want to talk to your captain now? Because I've been standing here or whatever. But there were some things in this that were inconsistent to character for me. So
I also think Torres would have. You know, would have given pause to that one time that in this scene when Icheb says, well, wouldn't you prefer to spend time with your husband, your free time with your husband?
Yeah.
I think at that time she would have went, wait, what are you trying to say? Wait a minute.
Yeah.
You think that I like you? I think that's where this should have happened in this scene where she would have realized, oh, you think I like you, but no, she doesn't get it yet.
But they kind of have this flirty thing working in the Jeffries tube. And then she stands up through like a portal in the top at the very end. And he quickly grabs his tricorder and scans her body. It was weird.
It was like weird,
her thighs are right in front of his face, and he's like scanning her thighs.
When he pulled it out, I think he almost dropped it, and so he kind of regained control. So it looked like he was trying to scan her, but I rewound it. He didn't scan her leg. It was just a little awkward. But I do think that Manu played that well, though, because the realization is like, oh, the doctor's told me this, and it's right.
The like blood pressure's elevated.
Like the way he his realization that, because in his mind, B'Elanna is in love with him at this point.
Yeah, that's scientific evidence.
Scientific evidence. I have the proof. And I think that the way he played it, his reaction on his face was priceless. It was just she's up high. And he's like, oh my God. It just, without any lines, he played it very well. So good job to Manu on that one.
I've never seen, by the way, portals going up in the Jeffrey's tube. We always have to climb
end. It's always horizontal, correct? So it's not
always horizontal tube. You get to a junction, and then it goes up and down. I've never seen us like just stand up in the middle.
You can't in a normal Jeffrey's tube. No. You're not able to stand up. You have to be crawling the entire time.
Yeah. We're back to the Kralor Bridge.
Yep.
Harry is in the captain's chair. There's an alarm. There's a power fluctuation in the propulsion system.
Mm-hmm. Seven says it's destabilizing the cloak. Kim says all stop. The ship ends up decloaking. And the next scene, we're now in the engineering area for the Kralor ship.
I called it the warp core room of the Kralor ship with the tiniest warp core I've ever seen in space. It is the tiniest.
It was like a little popsicle stuck right there.
I feel like my vacuum cleaner is bigger than their warp core.
This is what
I feel like my Dyson vacuum cleaner is larger than the engine that drives their ship.
Okay. First of all, it's a small ship. It's not a full-size starship. Okay. Secondly, it reminded me of, you remember like a traditional hot water, 50 gallon, 70 gallon, 100 gallon hot water heater, okay, that's in a house. All of a sudden, I don't know, maybe 25 years ago, companies had these, you didn't even have to have the heater anymore. You had this tiny box
that was
instant heat, right? So it just went through that box and it heated it quickly. So you didn't have to have the huge thing anymore. So I thought, oh, it's kind of like that. So yes, you're thinking this thing is smaller than my vacuum cleaner. But I was like, oh, this is advancement in technology.
No, I was like, no, this is cheaping out on the set costs. They just didn't, because it would be expensive to build a big warp core
room. Of course.
No, we'll just build a vacuum cleaner size.
But
we're in that tiny warp core and repairs are being made. Kim says, Kim dismisses, actually, Seven recommends that they run a full diagnostic. And he's kind of starting to dismiss. It's getting a little power crazy here.
Yeah.
Like, not listening to some advice.
Not at all.
Seven even says, you know, Janeway wanted us back before Voyager finished repairs.
Right.
We need to get moving.
Not only does he dismiss Seven, but he dismisses Loken. Loken's like, too, look, this system is super delicate. He's like, well, you know what? Correct me if I'm wrong, but you're a physician, and you know, you have to trust me on this. So we're gonna monitor
a little power crazy here.
Oh, huge, big time.
But when they're alone, Seven tells Harry that she discovered a serious flaw in the whole ship's systems. Right?
She says, "I've discovered a serious flaw in one of the ship's systems."
One of the ship's systems.
Like, which one?
What is it? Like, he's like, captain. What is it? The captain. I love that. She's like, you're issuing orders. You're having a...
Seven is reality check right now.
Yeah. She's like, instead of issuing orders and having other people carry them out, as most captains are supposed to function, you issue an order,
carry out the order as well.
Yes. And Harry's like, well, they're not experienced and I've got to do all this. And she's like, when you came on Voyager, Janeway supported you to learn.
That's right.
And she didn't do the work for you. She gave you a lot to do so that you could learn and gain confidence. So that's a great scene.
It is a good scene.
We're back on the Kralor Bridge now. Yeah. And as predicted, Harry didn't listen. The primary generator does fail.
As does their cloak.
And now all these Inari ships move in. They count six Inari ships out in space. We go out to space. We do see it decloak and the six ships start firing. We go back and forth between the bridge and engineering.
By the way, I did like both Inari and Kralor ships, by the way.
I did too. But during this little firefight, we cut between the vacuum cleaner warp room and the bridge. And Harry's like evasive maneuvers. And Seven says the primary generator's failing. And then there's this big hit on the bridge.
Yeah.
And it was a cool stunt moment. Like, great. tons of stuff.
No. When Seven says primary generator has failed.
Yeah.
She's not on the bridge. She's in engineering. And she's the explosion is what knocks her and another, you know, Kralor ND out.
It was in the engineering, but engineering. It was a cool explosion.
Yeah, it was a very good explosion. Yeah. And whoever was Jerry Ryan's stunt double did a good job getting blown back. Yeah.
With the hands flying back.
Yeah, really good.
Harry calls for Seven. She doesn't answer. He starts to go. Tarek says, no, you can't go down there. We need you here. And Dayla says, I'll go. Dayla volunteers, which is a classic redshirt move. She's going to be gone soon.
Yeah, but she's important, though. She's like the right-hand person to Loken. So I'm assuming scientist number two, right? So
you would think so. But Harry says, I'll talk you through all this over the comm. Mm-hmm. We go out to space with lots of shots out there, lots of firing of weapons.
Yeah.
And we go back to engineering. We see Dayla dragging Seven out. And I was like, first of all, she sort of dragged her around the corner and dropped her probably on a pad or something that was out there to be a nice, comfortable.
I thought it was a mannequin. I kept saying there's no way that she has the strength to pull her out that easily and just kind of fling her onto the ground. I know how hard it is to move a human being, and it looked easy to her.
I was confused here because I'm like, why is she, if she's trying to get the primary, you know, generator power back online, why does she care about moving Seven right now? And why?
Because life support was failing down there. That's why she felt that Seven would die if she stayed failing, inside.
I don't know. It was weird. It was like, put her outside and shut the door, and I'm gonna lock myself in this room where everything's failing. It just was not smart. I don't know who told her to do that. If Harry told her to do that, bad captaining.
I didn't say that.
But it was like, it was just weird.
I did not order her to do that.
I guess what I'm saying is I knew immediately when we put the series regular out in the hall and shut the door on ourselves, it's basically a suicide mission.
Okay.
But it would have been better if she said that. Like, you know, I'm going to stay in here and, you know, even if I die, I'm going to do everything I can. Like, at least say it, but. I don't know, it was weird.
So we go back and forth between the Kralor engineering room with Dayla and Kralor bridge with Kim, just asking about what's the field polarity. She says 206.4. He says that's too low. We have to raise it. And Dayla says she's going to bypass the phase converter. And that's when Harry micromanages again. He goes, no, I didn't tell you to bypass the phase converter. And Dayla says, well, won't that increase the field polarity? Kim's like, yes, but wait, listen to me. I want you to try. All of a sudden, Loken jumps in. He says, Dayla, it's Loken. Take the warp core offline. And Harry's like, what are you talking about? And then all of a sudden, Loken gets all science-y. He's a bypass the driver coil, shunt the power directly, polaron matrix. All this stuff. Cloak is back online. And Harry's like, get us out of here. Full impulse. Secure engineering section. And get back to the bridge, Dayla.
And that's when Loken says, did nothing.
Yeah, she's dead. But here's the thing. Before she dies, when she's doing all those things, she does do a little... She does like one two little it was a very light.
It goes from like, oh, I got a tickle in my throat to I'm dead.
And I'm sorry, that is the one part of this episode that annoyed the crap out of me. I'm like, wait a minute, she just died like a. But then again, we've already established the fact that from 54 crew members, half of them died very easily. So I'm just going to say that
they're very sensitive.
They're very sensitive to everything. They're extremely delicate. The Kralor are the most fragile aliens in the Delta Quadrant. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's all. That's the only thing.
Okay. We go to, I guess Loken comes in. Is this a quarters or where is this? Or their medical bay? I couldn't tell where this was.
I think this is in a crew, like a Kralor crew quarters area. Yeah. Because there's no sick bay here. It doesn't seem like, right?
Even though they're supposedly taking medical supplies, they have no medical facilities. But Loken enters and Dayla's dead and Harry's checking.
He's scanning her with a tricorder, right? Yeah. Which is not even, it's not a medical tricorder. It's like a regular tricorder.
And then he hands it to Loken and says, what do you think we should do?
doctor.
And Logan sort of, doctor.
Yeah.
And Logan sort of looks at the tricorder and then holds it really funny. Like, clearly doesn't know. He's not doing anything.
He has no clue what's happening.
Slides it around. And he says, do you think it's shock?
Yeah. And then Harry goes, I believe she may be in shock. Harry says, well, do you think we should give her a cortical stimulant? And Logan's like, well, that might be the right, you know, way to go. And then that's when Harry knows. He goes, you're not a doctor. God, I got to talk to you alone. Mm-hmm. And so now we're in the captain's ready room of the Kralor ship. And Kim's like, what the heck is happening? Logan tries to play it off. He's like, no, what are you talking about? And Harry's like, nothing adds up. Nothing adds up. You know more about the cloaking systems than biology. So did Dela. And then the second our cloak failed, half a dozen Inari warships come after us. One little tiny medical transport. So give me the truth. And, you know.
He does admit it. He says it's not vaccines. It's the cloaking technology. Device. We're trying to get this cloaking technology back home.
Yeah.
Because we've been blockaded. And
how long was the blockade for? 3 years. That's what he said. Yeah.
People are dying because of this blockade, and this cloaking technology would help them survive. But Harry's like, it's military. It's not humanitarian. Like, you lied.
Right. It's a complete lie. But that's a long blockade. That's a 3 year. I mean, I'm surprised they're even still alive after that amount of time. Mm-hmm. It's like, my goodness.
Harry's done at this point. He's like, we're going back. So he goes to the bridge. Yep. Tells them to turn around. We're going to head back to Voyager.
Yep.
And
Logan tells Tarek, oh, he knows about the cloak. And Tarek feels bad. Tarek looks at Harry and says, look, I would have told you, but, you know, and Harry's like, look, I gave you an order. And Tarek says, well, what about this mission that we're supposed to go to our home planet? And Kim's like, no, that's
we're not doing that anymore. We're going back to Voyager.
Yeah. If you want to be an officer, you need to follow orders. And Tarek's like, nope, I don't think mm-mm. so.
No, that basically it's a mutiny. Yeah. There's a mutiny. And then Loken relieves him of duty. Mm-hmm. So Harry's temporary captainship seems to be over for the moment.
Yeah.
And there's a mutiny. They're not listening to him anymore. They're going to take back the ship. Mm-hmm. We go to Corridor on Voyager, back to the Ichab story.
Before we get in the corridor, can I say one thing? When we were doing the intro, I talked to you about there's one huge glaring error in this episode. Mm-hmm. Hope maybe you'll find it. And it started in the scene where Harry takes Loken aside and says, you know, what the heck's going on? From that scene forward, if you notice, Harry has makeup on his face, but not his neck.
Really?
Oh my God. Okay, because typically I have a couple people that will do, well, one person that will be my main guy, which was Mark Sjostrom. Sjostrom would do my makeup, you know, and everyone else was able to do my makeup, but this was a individual who ended up, was a day checker, then ended up being like more of a regular person. And I'm not going to call them out about this, their name, but I'm just going to say they forgot to do my entire neck
part. Oh no.
So this is kind of darker, and this is lily white practically. Oh, and I was so upset. I remember walking back into the trailer after seeing this episode air. I walked the next time I worked after this episode aired, I walked in and talked to that makeup artist. I was like, did you watch the last episode that we did where you did my makeup? And they were like, no, I didn't see it. I said, you missed all of this. And they were like,
Because you got to take whatever you put on the face and kind of blend it down.
Bring it down. Yeah, right to the collar. Because
otherwise it looks like makeup.
It does. And that.
Can you imagine if we did prosthetics on aliens and we just did
mirror? Yeah, we just stopped
and then just left whatever neck they got.
Yeah, if Neelix's face stopped right here and then everything right here was was Ethan Phillips. Everything here is just his neck. It would look odd.
It would look
so
bad.
That, yeah. And so really that pulled me out of it when I was initially watching this.
That.
Yeah, but if you didn't notice it, then that's good. And to be perfectly honest, I noticed it less now than I did back then. Yeah, back then I caught it so quickly and I was like, holy moly, this is a huge error. But also, that's on me too. I mean, I should also be looking maybe in the mirror like, okay, am I good for this scene? And, oh, my neck's gone. But, you know, my neck's not covered. But typically when you have this many lines, all you can think about is get my lines right and get my lines down.
So yeah. A lot of words.
Yeah. And
a lot of words.
My only critique of a lot of my performance here is that sometimes when I was trying to remember my lines, I start hand acting. I start gesticulating because it's a way. Yeah. The gesturing is a way for me to help or remember a line, or I was getting a little foggy on what the next part of my speech was.
Yeah. So. It's funny. Like, when people give speeches, reading a speech, mm-hmm. you'll notice that there is often when someone's at a podium, they're teaching or lecturing or speeching.
Correct.
There will be emphasis because that's a situation where hand emphasis makes sense.
Are important, right?
But in real life, people generally don't use their hands very much. It's not a natural thing.
No. And Janeway, when she does use her hand, she does this. She'll just bring her hand up like this and she'll talk. So let me get this straight. I think right. So there isn't a lot of like, and then that and that and that. And I felt like if I was able to do this episode again. Yeah. So you didn't notice that I was extra handsy.
But if I was to do this again, you would tie your hands behind your back.
Oh, hell yeah. Behind my back. Yeah.
Handcuffs, whatever it took.
Okay. I remember one of the acting classes I was in that the teacher actually taped she taped one actor's eyebrows down because he would always act with his eyebrows. It was like, hur, 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 and she was like, no, this is your facial mugging. You know,
it's funny because that reminds me when I was in acting school, we had a class that was traditional classical mask work. So it was a Commedia dell'arte French mask work. And I loved the class. I loved it.
Yeah.
Because you would put on these leather, these beautifully handmade masks that had either neutral faces or different expressions, mm-hmm. and you would work the scene. And mm-hmm. and in the beginning, we did no words. It was just
moving,
miming almost, like going mm-hmm. through behavior with a mask on.
Right.
And then you get into dialogue and things. But I love the class because when you put the mask on, it takes away that sort of eyebrow acting or facial acting.
Yes, it does. No matter what, do it. Yeah,
it's not going to do anything.
No one's going to see it. You've got the mask on. So
with the mask on, suddenly you start feeling it. I did, at least. And I would feel the behavior, the situation, the scene much more deeply with that mask on. And it felt safer for some reason. Like
it sounds like this would be a good exercise for all actors to engage in mask work. Yeah.
It was really a great class. So,
yeah.
Okay, so we're back in our story. We go into a corridor. Paris is walking with Icheb. He even asks, should I be worried about you and my wife going, climbing together? Kind of joking. But at least he's like, I liked this little scene because Paris was like calling it as it is.
Yes. But Icheb is so nervous in this whole scene that you're going to crush him, essentially, right? That you're going to take him out. But Paris is his normal self, which is fine, which is exactly what we need, right? He's not going to do anything different from who he is.
He even invites him up to this holodeck program because he says, if you like climbing, you should try my race car program.
Yeah.
That's super fun. And Icheb completely misinterprets this, and he's like, are you proposing a competition?
You're challenging me?
Challenging me? Yeah. So then we go into engineering, and Icheb comes in and he says, we can no longer see each other. You're a married woman, and your husband just challenged me to a Klingon ritual competition. And she's like, what?
He's like, I scanned you. She's like, you scanned me? I love Roxanne's reaction. You scanned me? Yeah, in the Jeffries tube, your blood pressure and neurotransmitter readings indicated a state of arousal. Tori's like, look, it was hot. I've been under a lot of pressure.
And I've been climbing through tubes.
And he's like, Icheb, I like you. But, aside from the fact that I'm an older woman, I'm married. And then Icheb still doesn't get it. He's like, that's why you have to do the honorable thing. And I love how Roxanne played it. She's like, okay, fine. All right. Sure. You're right. As much as the truth hurts, I'll just have to face the truth.
It's
right?
Very funny.
It's very good.
I was glad that the scene happened finally. The last two scenes, the Paris scene and this scene. I was like, enough of this weird.
B storyline. Let's get out of this entirely. Let's
please get out of this.
Yeah. But played well by Roxanne. Good job.
Played great. We go to back to the Kralor ship.
Yeah.
Harry's going to visit Seven.
Yeah.
She sits up and
She sits up so quickly. She sits up very easily. Like there's no damage to her. She's like, yep, I'm good to go. Yep. Well, yeah.
He explains that there's been a mutiny, basically, that they lied and
there's no vaccine. Yeah.
Yeah. And Harry goes, you know what? We can get out of here. We can take these escape pods. She's like, well, wait a minute. You can't just ditch. Like, you're responsible. You've gotten this involved. You can't just shut it off like it's some holodeck program that you're not enjoying anymore. This is reality.
Yeah.
Like we've got to see this through, and these people won't get home without you. You've started this journey. You've got to finish it. And I thought that was a really good scene. I liked
it. Is a good scene. And you know, Harry brings up that Dala died, right? Someone died following my orders. And Seven's like, you know, you can't blame yourself for that. Captain, she goes, you can't blame yourself for that. And Harry's like, well, Captain is responsible for the lives of the crew. And Seven says, well, you know, people sometimes die on missions, despite the captain's best efforts. And Kim says, well, I should have stuck to playing Buster Kincaid. Seven says, a holodeck program can be turned off when it no longer suits you. You know, if you really feel responsible for this crew, you'll help them get home because they will not survive without you. So, yeah, you can turn off a holodeck program, but you can't turn off your responsibility as a captain at all. No, a good scene.
It's a good, I feel like this is a really good scene, and it feels at the heart of the story in a way of like what Harry's learning is that being a captain is not as easy as maybe he fantasized about getting these promotions or whatever. Mm-hmm. He's dealing with the reality, and Seven's a good, you know, mirror for that. So we go back to the Kralor bridge.
We do see an exterior shot of two Inari ships that are releasing these crazy pulses that sort of just they're like scanning pulses is what it is. And so the beginning of this scene on the Kralor bridge, Tarek is asking if that's some new kind of a weapon. And Loken says, no, they're scanning pulses to illuminate cloaked ships. If we hit one, we'll be exposed. Mm-hmm. So Tarek is like, well, how are we going to get through? And that's when Kim sort of says, hey, we'll find a way. That's he Kim walks returns. In right at that point. Yeah. Yeah, Loken's like, I thought you were leaving, buddy. And Kim's like, nah, I get claustrophobic in escape pods. Yeah, and he says, switch to manual helm control, full power to the shields. And Loken nods over at Tarek, and Tarek says, aye, captain. So Harry's got his captainship again. So.
This scene to me was, it happened too quickly for me.
I
was like,
agreed.
Wait, they just let him take charge. They're going to follow him suddenly without having a conversation about, like, are you really going to help? Like, he showed up and they're like, okay, you're back.
Yeah.
Well, you can take over. It was a little too fast for me, but, we go down to the planet again, where Voyager's sitting on the surface, another angle of Voyager down there.
Yeah.
I was very impressed with all those, visual effect shots of the ship. It was just different angles every time. Look cool.
Yeah.
We go to the bridge on Voyager, and, Jarral or is it Jarral?
Did they ever say his name?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. So let's just say Jarral or Jarral. Okay,
Jarral comes back. Yeah. And this time he comes back. He's going to escort Voyager out of Inari space.
Yeah, he did. Actually, he's on. So he hails them. So he's not on the ship.
Yeah, he's not on the ship. Yeah, but he's back in the story.
Yeah.
And he found out that they've attacked some of his ships some of his ships have been shot at by the Delta Flyer a few days earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And he also detected two of their people on a Kralor vessel.
Right.
And they have 5 minutes to get out of here.
Yeah. And also now no deuterium injectors, no dilithium, nothing. Nope. We get nothing except for an escort to leave.
And she has no choice. Like Janeway's basically left, like, well, I have to comply with this. Like,
it is what it is.
It is what it is. We go back to the Kralor bridge, and Harry is, you know, tossing out orders here. Stay 100 meters ahead of every pulse, but don't return fire, because then they could triangulate our position easier, which was smart. Very smart little move.
Yep.
He does appear to offer like a negotiation with them. He says,
"Yeah, he says open a channel to the lead Inari ship, right?" So he says that they're willing to discuss terms for surrender, and he says end transmission. And Loken is like, "How dare you? You know, we trusted you as the captain." And Harry's
Harry offers to. He says, "Let us get the people back to their planet, and we will give you this cloaking.
Yeah, you can have this technology. Damn ship. Yeah, you can take it, but let's let everyone get off of this ship safely. Mm-hmm. And the Inari commander agrees. He's like, yeah, okay, I'm down for that. So Harry's basic plan is to use the tractor beam of this Inari ship to propel the Nightingale mm-hmm. as fast as it's sort of like a slingshot effect when you're holding one person holds a rubber band and the other person releases it, it shoots the rubber band the other way. So that's kind of what Harry's plan is.
That would get them inside the defense perimeter and
then they'd be safe. That's all they need.
Safe, and they'd have their ship.
Yeah.
Basically use their own weapons against them. Mm-hmm. Someone says.
Yes.
So
the cloak, and it works.
Yeah. The cloak mm-hmm. is disengaged. The slingshot mm-hmm. happens. They're heading into the defense perimeter. It's a super tight close up on Harry when he says, take us to the surface at the end or something.
Yeah.
So, nice big close up there. Hero moment
for sure. And honestly, again, when I watched this, when it aired for the first time on UPN, the minute I saw the neck thing, I tuned out. Like I didn't, this episode's I can't even watch it. Like I was just a zombie at that point. I kept thinking, I can't believe they missed that. And so I didn't really watch myself as captain. And I think other than the excessive hand movements, I think I did an okay job in this one. It really came off pretty well. I'm happy with it. Definitely.
Yeah. It was nice to see Harry in a different kind of dynamic and relationship with people mm-hmm. than mm-hmm. the young, eager ensign. You know, it was nice to have that change.
So, yeah.
Exactly. We go to a Voyager flyby. Voyager's back in space. They've left that planet. Yeah. They're being escorted out of Inari space. Janeway tells Chakotay and Paris to take the flyer. We're going to have to go find Harry and Seven. When suddenly,
take the flyer. Isn't the flyer in the hold of the cradle?
That's what I thought. But then I started thinking, wait, Harry came back on the ship. Remember, you came back to tell the captain, hey, can I help these people? And it's not clear, but I think when you came back on the ship, you must have put the flyer back in on our ship.
It was
in the vacuum cleaner ship.
Yeah, but then didn't the other Inari guy, Gerald, didn't he say like, hey, I detected the hull of your shuttle inside that ship. So maybe he's just detecting residual.
Yeah, I think they detected earlier, but I think the time that you put the flyer back on Voyager was when you came down and said, hey, I'm going to help these people get home. Maybe. A little muddy. I had the same.
Well, here's the thing. Why would I put that back? Because if I'm helping them, that's our way off to come back to Voyager. So I think they screwed up. I think someone missed this entirely. That's my take on this.
Maybe.
Wow.
Because Janeway does say to Chakotay and Paris, take the flyer and tell Tuvok to go. It was a little confusing.
Right. So they're trying to bring long-range sensors on to find Harry's last known position. And the Tuvok's like, oh, wait a minute. And Kim's hailing us.
Do that? Yeah. he's hailing us right about now.
Yeah. And Jane was like, from where? Cloaked vessel. It's directly astern. So I'm right next to Voyager right now, mm-hmm. which is great. Mm-hmm. We have acting captain's log again. New cloaking systems are being installed in other Kralor ships. So the mm-hmm. mission was a success. Mm-hmm. Harry says, still, I wish I felt better about it. And we have our final button scene. Our final scene is in mess hall with Neelix. Neelix says, welcome home. Harry's like, you know, it's good to be back. So what's it going to be tonight? Souffle or lasagna? And Harry's like, you know, Neelix, truth is, I'm just not sure. And he says, I thought we talked about this. You know, a captain has to be decisive. And Kim's like, not a captain, Neelix.
Not yet, anyway.
So I felt like, oh, this is great. This is the lead-in episode. This is the episode which establishes the fact that, you know, down the road, Harry will show up as a captain at some point. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go, Nightingale.
What is your lesson that you have? What's the lesson that you got from this episode?
The lesson I got was in that scene with Harry and Seven when she says, you know, this isn't a video game. This is reality. And in reality, the lesson to me is, in reality, we all have to deal with the consequences of our choices.
Right.
And it's not a game that we can just shut off, that we have to continue on for better or worse. You know, sometimes we make good choices and there's payoffs, and sometimes we make other, you know, not great choices, and there's a consequence, and we have to deal with it. So that's the lesson to me.
Yeah.
What about you?
I think that, yeah, that's definitely one of the lessons I got. Like, you know, you just can't act like an ostrich sticking your head in the sand when everything goes bad. Yeah. So I do see that. But I think the other big message is about trusting people to do their job that they're mm-hmm. going to do and not having to do it for them. So really the lesson is not to micromanage. Nobody likes
that's a good lesson too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's something that everyone gets annoyed by. Mm-hmm. And you know what it is? I think most micromanagers are probably perfectionists in that they feel like, oh my gosh, I'm the one that can get this job done correctly. And I'm going to go ahead and do it anyway. And it takes a leap of faith to sort of give up that control, to being a control freak and say, okay, I'm going to say this, someone else will do it. And I will realize that they can do the job as well as I can do it. I can trust that they can get this job done. I don't have to micromanage everybody. So,
yeah.
So, you know, try to stay away from micromanaging everybody. That's my lesson on this one.
Good lesson. Mm.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Your rating?
My rating, you know, there's a lot of things about this I love. Obviously, I'm very happy for Harry getting a temporary captain's job, seeing a different side of him.
Mm.
But that whole Ichab story to me just bugged me on so many levels, aside from the fact that like it was just creepy. So I'm gonna give this episode. And also, here's the other thing.
Yes.
I like when there's humor in episodes and, you know, somewhere. And there wasn't, this was pretty straight ahead drama for the most part. And maybe the Ichab story had a little bit. I give this a 6.9, cut to the chase. 6.9s. Oh, yeah. Huh. I felt like there were some inconsistencies in characters. But that's what I give it. What about you?
I'm going to give this a 3.
What?
I'm kidding. I'm going to give this a...
what are you doing?
I had you going. I'm going to give this a... I'll give it a little higher than you. I'm going to go 7.3 on this one. 7.3. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, overall, it was an episode that had good guest stars, and it had a lot for my character to do, that's for sure. So this is a big Harry episode, and so I'm going to give it 7.3. What about our admirals and captains average?
Let me pull that up. Okay. Our captain and admiral's average rating for Nightingale is 6.5.
Mm,
so you and I were both a little higher.
Yeah.
Because I do think there was good things in this episode, but there was enough. It was just inconsistencies. I didn't feel like Janeway was acting her normal way. I didn't feel like B'Elanna was at all acting her normal way.
Yeah.
Even the inconsistency with Harry, like, it was good to see the strength in him.
Yeah.
But I felt like, where did all the other qualities of Harry go? It's like all of a sudden we're watching a whole different character.
Yeah.
Rather than sometimes Harry doubts himself. And it would have been nice to have seen some of that or some of his own insecurities or worries or earnestness or some of those things in the story over there. It just felt a little out. Everybody was playing a bit out of character for me.
That's okay. Fair enough.
Delta Flyer just magically appeared back on Voyager. We don't know.
We're going to go into even more depth in our bonus materials for sure on this episode. So we want to thank everyone for joining us for this recap and discussion of Nightingale. Join Robbie and I when we recap and discuss next week's episode, Flesh and Blood, parts 1 and 2. So I guess they stuck both parts into one episode.
Hmm. Wow.
Okay. So this is a two-parter that's basically a one single episode. And that's weird. We don't do that like
that. It is very weird.
We do Unimatrix Zero Part 1, and then the next week is Unimatrix Zero Part 2. But this episode is 1 and 2 together in an hour and 25-minute episode. So,
what?
Yeah.
That's weird.
That is super, super odd.
We'll see what that's about next week. But right. I'm curious. Okay. I'm very curious about that.
Yeah,
that's
me too. Weird. Me too. All right. For all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material.